Crossover live to Lebanon, where Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is speaking. Let's listen in to what he has to say.
All of the lies and all of the curses. Anyway, I won't name now, but please listen to me very well. There are some political powers in the Arab world today which will awake when some of the Arab media for years accused us and cursed us and lied to us and behaved unjustly to us and tarnished our image, and they were silent or in agreement. Now this same media has turned against them, against these Arab powers, especially the media which is financed by the Gulf. These groups, if you consider that what is being said about you in these media outlets, if you consider them as lies, why did you believe what was said about us on these same media outlets? Why is what the media outlets, what they say about you, why are they lies? And when it comes to us, you believe them? No, there is politicized media, media which is participating in political battles. And this is what is happening with us in Lebanon, in detail. So I don't take too long. I would like to repeat once again, we are in year 2012 and we have a political problem in the country, and there are deep political divisions in the country. There are disagreements on internal issues and regional matters as well. However, what is new, the new factor I want to say, is that are we in disagreement that there is a social financial catastrophe in Lebanon? No, this is not a subject of disagreement. Time and again, religious figures, the Maronites, the Sunnis, the Shia, all components of Lebanese society, all sides, they say that there is a economic problem in the country. Before I go into the regional situation, I want to focus that there are a lot of sufferings, especially now on the gateways of winter and the school season. Second of all, we agree that this problem should be solved by the state. And number three, it shouldn't be solved by the government. The government could be part of a political alliance, but there is another alliance in the opposition. This issue, the opposition and those in power, they must put together a certain group. They must put together a certain group which should sit down, politicians, laborers, economists. That's detailed. But in principle, forming a working coalition which should say that we Lebanese, irrespective of our divisions, who's in power and who's in opposition, how can we put together a certain program and a plan to confront the crisis which we are facing, and how can we cooperate to confront it before collapse? This is a moral duty, a national duty, and a religious duty. Today I say, if a working group is formed and if there is an interest for us to be part of this group, we are ready to participate, even with those who are cursing us and are accusing us day and night. We have no problem in participating. We put this issue aside. Let's set our political divisions, our political confrontations aside, and say that there is a big national issue, a big humanitarian issue, a big ethical issue related to the lives of the people, to the food, drink, and fate of the people. And so let's put together a group of national dialogue, a national group to lay down a national plan and a national program, and let's go all and support it. And whatever be the government, all of us as Lebanese, we must call on this government to implement this program. This is what is required. Now, let me speak about the political situation before I refer to the regional situation. Regarding the political situation, now we don't have a table of national dialogue. There are no parliamentary sessions being held. The country has been disrupted because the opposing side, March 14, took a decision to boycott. The aim of boycotting, and before that, the movements which we saw on the street, The aim of all this was to topple the government, but it is clear now that the government hasn't been toppled. And now, today, we are witnessing boycotting. The boycott began about 1-2 months ago, and it's clear that the boycotting will not overthrow this government. Not because we hold on to it, but because all of the local and regional and international factors, all of them show that there is an interest for the government to continue. So boycotting, if the aim of boycotting is to overthrow the government, this won't lead or won't yield any results. It would only lead to more losses at the level of the country by disrupting the parliament first and foremost. However, the insistence of the other side to boycott, it's clear that the goal of this is not only to overthrow the government or to put pressure on the government to resign, because it's clear that this government won't resign even if you continue to boycott. The real goal of the boycotting process is to disrupt the parliament so that no laws are made, no new laws are put together, especially a new electoral law, and hence putting the Lebanese in front of two choices: either elections according to the 1960s law or no elections whatsoever. And both alternatives are bad. I don't want to say which is worse. We'll speak about that later, but both are bad choices. What I want to say, not as neutral sides, people at the center, in a transparent way, we are not neutral sides, and we are not mediators. We don't play the role of mediators. Not because we don't want to, but because we are the ones who are targeted. We are the ones who are targeted. Can I be neutral when I'm the one targeted? No, I can't. We are targeted. Yes, we, in this political stance, this political position, we are part of a disagreement, and we agree, or we are proud on the side which we are on and which we were on and we will remain on. We are proud of being on this side of the problem. There is no problem. However, this does not prevent us to give advice. They give us advice, we give them advice. Although there are some people here in this country, if you give them advice, they consider you arrogant, as if they are higher, of a higher class than being given advice. No, we accept advice and we give you advice as well, because that's how the world is formed. I would like to draw their attention, the March 14, I'd like to draw their attention to a mistake in their evaluation. You have based all of your calculations, as usual. Previously, the same thing happened. You have a certain evaluation, and based upon this evaluation, you are sitting down and boycotting and preventing a new electoral law from being ratified, and you are pushing the political situation, and you are preventing any achievement from being made by this government. By boycotting, in the end, if the government wants to make or do anything for the Lebanese or the people, they are blocking the road for this government from doing so. So what are they relying on? A few days, the regime in Syria will be toppled. 1-2 weeks, the regime in Syria will be toppled. Then they say, okay, 1-2 months, the regime in Syria will be toppled or will fall. Is this evaluation correct? First of all, this talk is not new. The events in Syria will enter the two-year period. The events have approached the two-year period. From day one, some of the emirs and some of the kings and some of the presidents and some of the ministers and those who follow them, members or leading figures of the March 14 Alliance, they all said that the regime in Syria will fall in 2 months. Now we're approaching 2 years. 2 months passed and the regime didn't fall. Then they renewed another 2 months. The other 2 months, then passed, and then they renewed 3 months. They took caution. They didn't say 2 months. They said 3 months. They renewed 3 months. The 3 months passed. Then they said the month of Ramadan. Ramadan passed. Then they said 3 months after Ramadan. And then we reached Aleppo and Damascus and the last month of Ramadan. Now we're entering nearly 2 years. This is number one. Number two, if you are relying on information which you receive, your information is incorrect. All of the media outlets and all of the Arab satellite media, and they know this, these are lies and psychological warfare. However, on the media, they focus that Damascus is collapsing and it will fall into the hands of the armed opposition, and in a few days the regime will end. This is the atmosphere which we witnessed over the past 2 weeks. But all this information is incorrect. It's incorrect. And anybody who is fair, who looks at the map of Syria, if you take a look at the map of Syria, the cities and the areas and the important places where the regime still exists and is still strong, and the other areas under the control of the opposition, and they can read and analyze. If they analyze, would they reach the conclusion that the regime will fall in 1-2 days or 1-2 months or 1 or 2 years? Don't base your assumptions on false or incorrect information. From 2005 until now, never has the March 14 relied on assumptions that have become correct, that came out to be correct. I remind you of what I said before, 5 evaluations whereby they were incorrect. And now for 2 years, you have been committing the same mistake. At the same time, the real national forces, they are the ones who are acting on the national level, irrespective of the regional developments. But you are a political coalition which always relies on the regional and international situation. What Israel does, what happens in Syria, what the Americans will do. Let's speak to each other as Lebanese. So I'd like to advise them not to continue in their incorrect evaluations and to certify their information regarding what is happening in Syria, and let them reconsider their boycott and let them not increase the crisis in the country, and let them go back to the parliament and let them sit down together and discuss the electoral law, because the normal approach, we have a few months until the parliamentary elections in Lebanon. Okay, we sat down for 2 years in the tents when we had the open strike, and we said at that time, let's wait and close eyes and open eyes and 2 years will pass. Okay, wait just a few months. The normal approach is for the people to sit down, for a new electoral law to be put together, let the new elections be held, and based on the new elections, the new government will be formed. If we want to overcome the obstacles, if we want to take our country to safety and work for the national interest, we must not continue to wait for the people to come from the airport of Damascus. No, come from a Beirut's airport and let everyone reconsider this. Now, so I have ended the Lebanese political situation. I've concluded my speech about the Lebanese political situation. I'd just like to say, if we want to exit the crisis, we have a table of dialogue. If you want to go back to the table of dialogue, we welcome you. There is a parliament. Go back to the parliament. Let's put together a new electoral law and hold elections. And whoever wins these elections, let's see how he wants to form a new government. This is the normal approach so that the country can exit the current phase. I'd like to say a few words about Syria, and then I'd like to say a few words about Palestine. With respect to Syria, I'd like to say something in addition to what I mentioned just before. In the current situation, it's becoming more complicated in Syria, and even those who believe that the armed opposition is capable of being or reaching a result militarily is mistaken. Whoever thinks that they can deal a militarily decisive blow is mistaken. The situation in Syria has taken a different approach. The description before about the situation in Syria as a confrontation between the regime and its people, irrespective of evaluating this description, now this description is incorrect. This is incorrect. Today in Syria, there is real popular divisions. There is a real popular division. We have the regime, and there is a significant group of the people who support the regime, a significant percentage, and there are people who are against the regime, who have taken up arms and who are resorting to the help of regional and international powers, and hence we saw armed conflict. Now, some people who speak about our moral or ethical stance, some people ask, are you with the Syrian people or not? I'd like to ask them a question. Today, the people of Qatana, let's speak about the latest events, not 2 years ago. The people of Qatana, are they Syrian or not? The people of Jurmana, are they Syrian or not? The people of the Damascus suburbs, are they Syrian or not? And many of the cities and villages in Syria whereby bombed cars or car bombs are sent to them. And when do they send these car bombs? They send them at 7:30 or 8 o'clock when all people are going to schools, when the roads are full of people. They send these bombs and people want to come and gather the wounded. The second car bomb then explodes. This is the highest level of hatred. Aren't these Syrian people? For all those for over 2 years who asked me, I want to ask them, where is your ethical stance for the Syrian people who are being killed by the armed opposition? Where is your ethical stance regarding the Syrian people who are being put against the wall and killed in front of the cameras? Where is your ethical stance regarding those whose heads are cut off by knives in Syria? Where is your ethical stance for those who are being thrown from top of the buildings in Syria? What is your ethical stance regarding those who are being killed according to their identity cards in Syria? Aren't they Syrian people? So nobody should hide and say the regime and the Syrian people. No, we have a regime which is defending its existence in accordance with its conviction. There is a significant percentage of the people with the regime, and there is an armed opposition who wants to overthrow this regime, and there are some people with this armed opposition, and there is a bloody confrontation in Syria. A very hard confrontation. And unfortunately, I'd like to say that the battle is a long battle in Syria. It's going to be a long battle. The reason is that the armed opposition and those who support the armed opposition, regional countries, international sides, they reject any dialogue with the regime. They reject any dialogue. What does it mean when you reject dialogue? It means continuing with the armed confrontation. It means more killings, more destruction, more bloodshed. Why do you reject dialogue? Why do you reject the political solution? Very frankly, I'd like to tell you that there are countries today which have a lot of money and they sit down, they don't care about anything. If Syria continues to fight, if people continue to fight one another in Syria for 1, 2, or 10 years, those people haven't lost anything. They have a lot of money, they don't care. They send money. What do they have to lose? And the regional powers, they benefit from this conflict. They benefit from this conflict. Between us and Al-Qaeda, there are no ties. There is sometimes rivalry, arguments between us and Al-Qaeda. But today, I'd like to speak to Al-Qaeda and say that the Americans and the Europeans and some of the governments in the Arab and Islamic world, they set up a trap for you in Syria. They set up a trap for you in Syria, and they opened the field for you to come to Syria from all over the place, from London, from Paris, from Saudi Arabia, from the Emirates, from Yemen, from Pakistan, from Afghanistan, etc., etc., so that you could kill each other in Syria. And you fell into this trap. You fell into this trap. And even if we assume that these groups which are affiliated to Al-Qaeda or its ideology, even if they can make an achievement on the battlefield, they are the first ones who will pay the price in Syria, just as they paid the price in other countries. There is a trap which has been set. Today, the Americans, I'd like to tell you, and also to the March 14 Alliance, I'd like to tell them, beware, the Americans are in no hurry for the situation to end in Syria. They are in no hurry. On the contrary, they want the situation in Syria to take long, to prolong, because more killing amongst the Syrian opposition and more killing amongst the Syrian army and the Syrian security services and more killing of the Syrian people, different Syrian people, this means a weak Syria, this means a destructed Syria, a destroyed Syria, an exhausted Syria, and hence Syria has been eliminated from the regional equation. And this serves who? It serves the US and Israel. So today, strategically, and also nationally, and politically, and logically, and also from the humanitarian perspective, we always said that our hearts feel sorrow and we feel pain. We feel deep pain when anybody falls in Syria, every child, every woman, every young person, every elderly, whatever be his affiliation. These are normal feelings, even humanitarianly. Today, it's the responsibility of everyone to work for a political dialogue, and anyone who prevents political dialogue is a criminal who takes responsibility for everyone or anybody who was killed in Syria. He is a criminal. He is guilty because he insists on the killing and on the bloodshed, whatever be his slogans. Today, the situation is much more complicated because there are extremist groups who are present, and this has worried even their allies in the Syrian opposition. Listen to their statements, read their articles. They have the right to be worried, because whoever looks at the experience in other countries must be concerned about the future, about the alternative, and be concerned where is Syria being dragged to. So for this reason, the responsibility, the humanitarian, ethical, religious, national responsibility, strategic responsibility, is that all efforts must be exerted so that everybody accepts a dialogue which leads to a political settlement in Syria. The last few words about Gaza. Also, I'd like to enter Gaza from the Lebanese gate. Just a few days ago, a delegation, the entrance is simple. A delegation from the March 14 Alliance went to Gaza a few days ago. They congratulated and they made statements, they issued statements. Some of our allies in the March 8 Alliance had a kind of confused perspective. I'd like to say my perspective, state my perspective. I, for one, was very happy. And I'd like to tell you that this is something good. And I encourage March 14 members to go to Gaza and express their support for the resistance in Gaza and support the arms of resistance in Gaza and congratulate the victory of the resistance in Gaza. And we don't want them to support the arms of resistance in Lebanon, nor to congratulate the resistance for its victory in Lebanon, or to recognize our victory in Lebanon. We, the resistance in Lebanon, we consider that we got our rights when somebody goes and congratulates the resistance in Gaza and recognizes the importance of its arms. We have been given our rights if that happens. That's excellent. It's excellent when you do that. And what is even better, I read this in the newspapers, is that some of the figures who went to Gaza, they said, we will not abandon one inch of the Palestinian territory. Excellent. So what's our disagreement then? What's our disagreement? If they go to Gaza, if you go to Gaza and speak in this way, go to Gaza and we'll pay you for your visit. Of course, this is a sympathetic stance. I hope it becomes a political stance, because some other politicians don't say this. Others adopt the Arab Peace Initiative, which gives two-thirds of Palestine to the Israelis. But anyway, this is a good development. Even if it's sympathetic, it's good. With respect to Gaza, the victory which we saw, I'd like to say, of course, we spoke previously about what happened, but let me also pick up on the situation in Gaza. Remember in the July 2006 war, the 33-day war, what was said after that war? It was said that Israel was not defeated, Hezbollah did not achieve victory, there was some malfunction in the leadership, there were some problems in the leadership. Amir Peretz doesn't know anything about the Ministry of Defense. The Joint Chief of Staff, the Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, is an Air Force figure. He doesn't know how to fight infantry wars. Olmert was a mayor, he came as a prime minister, so there were some malfunctions and problems, but Israel is strong, is capable, and is able of making, dealing defeats. This was said Lebanese-wise and Arab-wise as well, because I don't want to recognize the victory. Not we are strong, they made their mistakes. That's what some people said. So the Israelis put together committees, Vinograd, studying commissions, and in addition, they formed tens of investigative committees in the Israeli army to discuss technically and to look at the holes. Where are the holes? Where are the gaps, the problems, and learning the lessons? And the Israelis worked after 2006, and they built a new army, actually. The magnitude of capabilities, the new equipment, the training, ever since 2006 until now, never throughout the history of Israel have we witnessed these maneuvers, this training, these preparations. Israel has learned all of the lessons, and in the next war, Israel will come to crush the whole world. I'm saying it very clearly. So, it wasn't that the atmosphere? Yes. So we wore the Gaza War 2009, the end of 2008, the beginning of 2009. Back then, they said that Gaza has lost. Those same people who went and congratulated Gaza, they said Gaza has lost. But it was uncovered then that the Israeli army is an army of failure. Although the Minister of Defense, at that time he was Barak, I believe, the Joint Chief of Staff was Ashkenazi. Ashkenazi was always part of the infantry divisions. He was the head of the Northern Command, one of our neighbors here in the south. They learned the lessons. Now 2012, training and learning lessons and preparations and arming and huge budgets, and you all saw with your own eyes, my brothers and sisters, oh, you Lebanese, you Arab people, you saw with your own eyes how two or three missiles, of course, on Ashura, I said 10. Now, when we monitored, they were three, after looking in detail, three. Two fell in Tel Aviv, and the third landed in one of Tel Aviv's suburbs. Three missiles made Netanyahu and Barak and the Joint Chief of Staff and the Home Front Minister run to the bomb shelters and raise their arms in surrender. Against an isolated Gaza, an entity which is like a hand, the palm of the hand, no geography, no mountains to protect it. This was the true nature of Israel. Really, Israel was defeated in this last confrontation, and it begged for a solution. Isn't this a lesson which we could learn? What does this show? It shows that what happened in 2006 was not an Israeli mistake. What happened in 2009 in the Gaza Strip also was not a mistake, because what happened in 2012, just a few weeks ago, was also not a mistake. Mistakes happen once, they happen twice, three times? Are we playing football? There are governments which are falling. There are countries which are changing their ideology of warfare. When we say drawing lessons, we must here focus and point out that Israel, this strong Israel, this confident, capable, this scary Israel, this Israel has ended forever. This decline of Israel began ever since 2000, when they were defeated, and at that time they described it as a strategic defeat. It's not about a borderline or how many villages there are, but for Israel to leave Arab territories without conditions in a humiliating way, in a defeated way, under the strikes of resistance, this is a strategic loss. And this was the nail in the coffin of Israel, which opened the route to the other nails, and the other nails are coming, God willing. Now, allow me with just a couple of more minutes to conclude for all those who spoke throughout the war on Gaza and after the Gaza war. They said that there were some problems in the ties or relationship between some Palestinian resistance factions, specifically Hamas and Hezbollah, or with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And you know that a lot of analysis was written that the Palestinian resistance has returned to the Arabs and has left the Iranians, and that today the flag has become an Arab flag once again, and that Iran has done this to Palestine and the Arabs are retaining Palestine. A lot was said in this perspective. Now, according to our experience, we know that a lot of what is written are wishes and not facts. A lot of what we see in the articles are wishes and not facts. I'd like to say just a couple of words with respect to Gaza and Palestine and the Islamic Republic. Of course, our ties are normal with all of our Palestinian resistance factions. There are no problems. Let me reassure them. Now, with respect to Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, when it provided and what does provide the support for the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance, especially inside Palestine, it is doing its moral, religious, humanitarian duty. Point, period. And these are all of a Palestinian resistance factions. Let one of them say, for 20 or 30 years, did Iran request anything in return? Do you want any more transparency, more than this? Iran, did it demand anything in return? Did Iran intervene in any political decision? Iran, did it say carry out operations or don't carry out operations? Did it tell the Palestinian faction to escalate or not? Did Iran say go ahead with a truce or don't go ahead with a truce? Did Iran say go ahead with the reconciliation or don't go ahead? Did Iran take part in any of our internal structures or any of our internal divisions? Let any of the Palestinian factions say no. For 20 years, the Islamic Republic gave support for the Palestinian resistance without any conditions, and Iran never even expected our thanks. And all this issue is a confusion. Iran is doing its duty towards Gaza. I can speak, of course, because of the good ties with the Iranian Supreme Leader. I can speak in this way, and I'd like to tell you that if the Arab countries go to Gaza, and if they provide money and arms, and they transfer arms and give them missiles and train them, and if they help them with military expertise and strengthen them, we will salute these Arab countries and support them and speak highly of them and walk behind them, and then they will help Iran with respect to the money and the arms, and then these money and arms for the Palestinians will get them. If somebody assumes that they're taking Palestine away from Iran, or taking the Palestinian cause away from Iran, or taking Gaza away from Iran, these are childish dreams. Iran, the only thing it wants for Palestine is for the Palestinians to be strong, capable, and able to defend themselves and retrieve their territories. The most happy people for the victory of the Palestinian people, the most happy side was Iran. And Iran doesn't want anything from the Palestinian resistance. And so go ahead. Who wants to raise the Palestinian flag? The new Egypt? Okay. The Arab countries? Okay. And we also in Hezbollah, we will stand and we will salute every Arab country and every Arab leader and every Arab president, and we will say, we are with you and we are behind you for the sake of Palestine. Let the Arab flag go back once again. So there is no hesitation here. Anyway, we took your time. I would like to express my thanks once again to all of you brothers and sisters, to all of those who are present. May God bless you for all those who graduated. I wish them the best of luck. I hope that God will open a new horizon for you. I hope the best. I wish you all the best. I wish you happiness in this world and in the aftermath. I will also call, I apologize, I couldn't be present in person. I would like to call on Sayyid Ibrahim Ibn Sayyid and Mr. Muhammad Afnaish, my colleagues, to take up the responsibility of distributing the certificates or, well, I don't know what you've prepared. I wish you the best of luck once again. Happy graduation and assalamu alaikum.
Well, that was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaking at a university graduation ceremony. And